It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The governor is considering a $31 billion budget becoming law in Pennsylvania as legislators continue to grapple with how to pay for it. Anti-tobacco advocates from the American Cancer Society are calling on state lawmakers to levy an increased cigarette tax. Earlier this summer, Philadelphia began imposing a so-called soda tax. Taxes like these are often referred to as Pigovian taxes. But what are they, and do they, and why do they infuriate some people while making others happy? Pitt Business School professor Kate Lamberton is an expert on Pigovian taxes. She's written an award-winning research paper on the topic and joins us now to talk about consumer perceptions of them. Kate Lamberton, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much.
You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. We'd like to know how you feel about imposing taxes on some consumer habits because they create costs for everyone, not just the people who undertake them. Are these taxes fair? Should people be punished for buying soda or cigarettes, or is it an example of nanny state intrusiveness? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Kate Lamberton, what is a Pigovian tax, and why do they have that name?
Well, they have that name because they were developed first by Arthur Pigou, who was a British economist. And his work really started by thinking about environmental issues. He said that there are companies that do things that put pollutants, for example, into the environment, and we all carry those costs. So Pigou said, you know, we really should find a way to tie those costs back to the people who are creating them. And from there came an entire theory of Pigovian taxes. And they're just what you indicated earlier, that when somebody undertakes an action that creates a cost for other people, it doesn't seem completely fair to some people, at least, that everyone else carries that cost.
And the presumption of cost would be let's look at the soda tax.
Mm-hmm.
That you're consuming all of this this beverage that's sweetened by corn syrup, not just old fashioned sugar, but this stuff that's even worse for you, or so we're told, and that this is going to create a health risk that if you need to be taken care of, the state is going to have to assume the cost. Therefore, you should have to pay a little more for this dangerous behavior you're engaging in.
Right. The argument with soda tax is that it's closely linked to the obesity epidemic. And obesity creates a lot of costs that are, some are very visible, such as healthcare costs that go up across the system. Some of them are a little more subtle. For example, airplanes may have to put in bigger seats. If airplanes put in bigger seats, they can carry fewer people.
Yeah, like that's happening.
Well, interestingly, there's a company in Samoa that has started charging flyers by the pound so that they can directly tie the costs of obesity back to the people who are raising the prices.
It may just, let's not even get into that. That's, now, Pigou, what was he was doing his work when?
Oh, so this is, 19th century.
Right. So what would the stuff, what would it have been, smoking?
No, actually, his original example had to do with farming. So if you do something that creates a problem for the farmer's herd that's adjacent to you, then those costs should not totally be borne by that farmer, but you should have to carry some of them.
Interesting. So the principle of that is being implied. I mean, this is long before he could have envisioned, anyone could have envisioned high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
So it's the principle that's being applied here. And what are externalities?
An externality is that cost that you create for somebody else.
Okay.
So there are other examples of these. For example, in California, penalties are paid sometimes when people don't vaccinate their children. People choose not to vaccinate for many reasons, but other parents may feel that that then puts their child at risk.
We're seeing that in Australia.
Yes, Australia is actually what they're doing is taking away a tax benefit from parents who don't vaccinate.
And we could see that here?
The attitudes toward these kinds of taxes in the U.S. are very mixed. So it's debatable. I'm not sure that on a national scale it might happen, but in certain municipalities it certainly could.
In a case like Philadelphia's soda tax, which will place a 1.5 cents per ounce surcharge on every sweetened beverage sold in the city, how does the city calibrate the tax to make sure that the tax is equal to the externalities, which you just explained, associated with soda.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that that's...
How do they arrive at 1.5 cents per ounce, which, so that's like a, if you have a 16-ounce soda, and let's say 32, because that's how people buy them, and you're talking 32 cents on the drink.
Yeah, the cost of the drink. It comes out to about a dollar for a 2-liter.
Or actually 1.5. Yeah, right, 1.5.
Math.
Yeah, not my strong suit. Either, but it's a substantial cost. The point the point is understood there. So, 412-246-2002. What do you think about this idea, the soda tax? And again, as I mentioned at the outset, the legislature looking at a cigarette tax as a way to pay for the budget, which the governor is going to let become law, but not sign because he says that we really haven't come up with a way to pay for it. So this would be one way to do that. And there's a question that goes with that, that I'm going to save because we have Pete in Regent Square on the line with a question. Hi, Pete. Welcome. You're on with Kate Lamberton.
Thank you. I just had a question on the obesity issue in particular. You know, our government subsidizes corn and sugar to make it cheaper for consumers. So I'm just curious, why does it always seem that the liberal solution to big government is more big government? Thanks.
Interesting. Well, I like the point of the contradiction that if the government is subsidizing farmers who grow the corn, which creates the high fructose corn system, then syrup, that then shouldn't that be looked at as maybe you tax the corn growers?
I think that'd be tough because corn can be used for so many different things, whereas sugary drinks can really only be used for one thing. So I think part of the argument for this approach would be that it's actually more directly connected to the externality. But what's also interesting is that there have been conservatives that have been very pro-Pigouvian taxes as well. Greg Mankiw, who was an economic advisor to Bush and then later to Romney, is a big fan of Pigouvian taxes. And he feels that it's because they help ameliorate some problems in a way that's less intrusive than corporate taxes because they're applied directly to the consumer. So what we found interesting about these taxes from the very beginning of our research is that support is not determined by conservative or liberal.
That is interesting because we're so divided along those lines on so many other issues. But let me ask you this, Kate, and we're talking with Kate Lamberton, who is a Pitt professor and an expert on Pigouvian taxes, as they are called. She's with the Pitt Business School. She's written an award-winning research paper on the topic. And we'd like to know how you feel about Pigouvian taxes, about imposing taxes on some consumer habits because they create costs for everyone, not just the people who undertake them. Are they fair taxes? Should people be punished for buying soda or cigarettes? What do you think? 412-246-2002, the number to call. 412-246-2002. Pete in Regent Square just weighed in. I think we can count him under the idea of that those believe in of nanny state intrusiveness. That seemed to be where he was going with that. But here's a question I have. If a Pigouvian tax is meant to discourage certain activities like smoking, doesn't this defeat the purpose, which is to raise revenue through taxes? Or certainly that's what the legislature's looking at doing, right? So if everyone quits smoking, which wouldn't be a bad thing, there goes the means of paying for the cost of the state budget, for example, right?
Well, the idea would be that if everyone quits smoking, some costs go away as well, right? So some piece of the budget could be smaller. But the truth is that's not going to happen. A lot of these behaviors, like smoking, are addictive. So we do have some built-in security that people will not be that sensitive to a tax. The best example we have with regard to soda is in Mexico, where they imposed a penny per peso per liter tax. And there they saw a 12% decrease in consumption over a year. So you could see a decrease at large, but it's very unlikely that it would push consumption to zero.
412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002 to weigh in on this. Email esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at esspgh. Again, the number 412-246-2002. So you've done extensive research on Pigouvian taxes. And how does the public respond to them generally? What are you seeing?
It's very mixed.
Very mixed.
Some people really love them. And what we've found are that the people who support them the most voraciously are the people who really believe that in general, everyone's behaviors affect everyone else. They're the no man as an island people. These people simply see everyone as interconnected, and therefore they see these taxes as very, very fair. They think that it's inevitable that others' actions are going to create costs or benefits for me, and those should be placed back on the people who create them. The people who reject them the most, on the other hand, are the, no, I'm an island. My behavior affects only me, and therefore I'm the person who's responsible. I shouldn't carry penalties even if other people experience them. They are much more isolated.
How do we know that soda is causing the obesity? I mean, it's a pretty logical mm-hmm. conclusion to say that soda, which is made differently than it used to be made, again, with the high fructose corn syrup, that can be linked to obesity. But, you know, years ago, I mean, we've had soda in this country for a long, long time. I mean, Coca-Cola mm-hmm. has been doing a good business for years and years and years. We didn't see the kind of obesity in America years ago, even, say, 20, 25 years ago that we see today. So how do we know that that's just the soda that's doing that to it? What about all the other fast foods and things?
It's certainly not just the soda. But I think the argument is that the soda offers very little other redeeming benefit in terms of nutritive value. And so it's a pretty easy scapegoat in some ways.
You could do that. You could say that about a lot of things.
You could. I think soda is, again, it's not necessary for anyone's sustenance. It doesn't provide any other nutritional value. And so, it's a easy culprit to chase. But of course, obesity is multiply determined. There's no question about that.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with Kate Lamberton, an expert on Pigouvian taxes. Let's go to Gordon in Bloomfield with a question or a comment. Hi, Gordon. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on today. I can't help but feel like these Pigouvian taxes target folks in a lower income and working class bracket who don't have the access to these other resources other than these sugary drinks. Maybe they live in a food desert or something like that. And I was wondering if there was any research to support that these taxes more adversely affect people in a lower income bracket.
That is a great question. Mm-hmm. And not only we've talked about food deserts here in Pittsburgh, in poor areas. I think that situation has been corrected in the Hill District. But for years, that area of town was considered, and it would be safe to say it's largely a lower income area that did not, for years and years, did not have a grocery store in the area. So people, particularly if you didn't have a car, maybe you're relying on those corner stores, which don't have the access maybe to healthier drinks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one argument against them. They're regressive, and logically they are. That's completely valid. Another approach that's been considered because of that regressive problem is that government could give tax subsidies to these smaller convenience stores that shift their provision from the unhealthy to the healthier products. So instead of making it a penalty, they can make it a reward for creating a healthier proportion in the market. If they could do that at a lower cost, it might help reduce the regressiveness of the soda tax and also improve their nutritional options.
We have Valerie on the South Side. We'll get to you. We do need to get to a break, though, first. And so stay with us and other callers who are trying to get through to take part in this conversation with our guest, Kate Lamberton of the Pitt Business School, an expert on Pigouvian taxes, who's written an award-winning research paper on the topic. What do you think about Pigouvian taxes? Are they the kinds of things that we should be imposing on citizens? Or are they just a bad idea? Part of that nanny state that so many people have a problem with. 412-246-2002. We'll continue our conversation. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about Pigouvian taxes, the kind of taxes being imposed in Pennsylvania on tobacco, on smokers, people buying cigarettes. Also in Philadelphia this summer, they began imposing a so-called soda tax in that city. They are the definition of Pigouvian taxes. We're talking about what they are, why they infuriate some people and make others happy, and whether you are for them or against them. We'd like to hear from you at 412-246-2002. If you have a comment or question for our guest, Kate Lamberton, who has written an award-winning research paper on the topic of Pigouvian taxes. Again, the number 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at ESSPGH. And let's go to Valerie, who is in South Park, I guess it is.
Yes.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Paul. I listen every day. I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
I call in quite often when I feel I have something valuable to add. I'd like to welcome Kate. This is a great subject. And I just wanted to say that if you would have asked me in my youth, I would have said, you know, we're autonomous, we're Americans, we should be able to have the freedom to live as we want. But as I got older, I think that I agree now that a certain level of this type of tax should be imposed, and I'll tell you why. It has everything to do with the subject you were just talking about, the soda and the sugar and Coca-Cola. My daughter was a member of the world champion Modernettes growing up, and the one year she was about 15, they won the right to represent the United States over in Eindhoven in the Netherlands at the World Championships. And so we were over there the week before Easter, and we took a lot of day trips. We were all around Eindhoven, which was a beautiful city. We went to Amsterdam one day. We went to Antwerp in Belgium one day. We were in Maastricht another day. And they had, you know, a lot of little local shops there that we ate in. But then sometimes, you know, we just wanted to grab something quick from a McDonald's. And, you know, they're everywhere. But when you go into a McDonald's over there, you were not allowed to buy, they just didn't even have it as an option, the large size that we have here of soda. They had, it was equivalent to our medium size, was the largest size you could get. You could buy as many as you wanted, but you couldn't get anything larger than that. And, you know, it dawned on us later on in the week when we all went as a group to buy souvenir T-shirts. There were a lot of people in our group that couldn't buy T-shirts because they just didn't make them
that
in
big.
Our big American
wow.
sizes.
No so, double XLs.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, from my point of view, government should act in our best interest and not always in the interest of these corporations trying to make money. They work for the people. And even when we don't know or think what is best in our interest, because all of this becomes the norm, this junk we eat, in the enormous quantities of sugar and carbs. You know, think about when you were a child. I never rode a bike with a helmet, but it's a law now. I never, you know, had a car seat when I was a baby, but it's a law now, and for good reason. And I just wanted to add that I think that we're behind a lot of the rest of the world in watching out for the health and well-being of their citizens. And that's all.
Well, Valerie, thank you.
Thank you.
Very interesting story and comment. Kate, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Valerie, because that example of taking away the larger sizes, that's exactly what Michael Bloomberg tried to do in 2012, you might remember. He tried to say that you couldn't buy a soda larger than 16 ounces in New York City. And also, as you indicated, what happened was that the soda industry sued. They fight these things pretty strenuously. They sued and they won. And the New York State Supreme Court declared the soda ban unconstitutional. So it's interesting that, you know, I'm not sure if in the Netherlands this is something that was voluntarily done by McDonald's or if it was due to policy. But in the United States, at least, there are laws that are going to make it hard to simply take an option off the table.
412-246-2002, the number to call. We have Victor in Mount Lebanon waiting to ask a question. Hi, Victor. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was in Tokyo last year, and their large is the size of our small or our medium in McDonald's for the beverage. They have very small portions. I don't like this tax. I'm a big government guy. I'm a liberal, but it seems to fall squarely on the disenfranchised, the people who, you know, don't have fresh fruits and fresh vegetables anywhere near their residence. And I'm not saying that's why they drink sodas, but it just seems to be that that's going to be the big group paying the bulk of it and feeling it. I can afford soda. I can pay the extra $2 a liter if I want. I don't know. I just think it's regressive, and I don't support it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for that comment, Victor. And that echoes the comments of a listener we had on earlier that have you heard a discussion, Kate, among the people that are in favor of imposing these taxes about how it affects the disenfranchised?
Yeah, I think that there, as I said before, there is a recognition that they are initially going to be regressive. The argument that people would make is that the payoff for these taxes in terms of investment could create a much longer lasting benefit to the same community. So, for example, in Philadelphia, the idea is that their projected amount they're saying is that they'll raise about $91 million, that they will take those dollars and put them back into the poorest communities in the form of pre-K development, community schools, parks, recreation, libraries. So the idea is, yeah, it's a short-term hit of a couple cents on something that is optional. But in the long term, we can have a better path to, empowering these communities and helping children than we would without that tax. So I think that's probably the justification that you hear for the initial regressive nature of the tax.
Let's go to David in Penn Hills at 412-246-2002. He has a question for Kate Lamberton. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, my question has to do mostly with how the definition of Pigouvian tax is similar to, different from, or an evolution behind sin tax, and how we're sort of leaving out in this conversation taxes on gasoline, taxes on
gambling.
Yeah.
And such.
Yeah, I think the idea of the sin tax is very, very similar. The reason that that phrase has dropped from popularity is because nobody likes to be scolded. And to say that people who drink sugary drinks are committing a morally reprehensible act is, it's a bit strong. But yeah, they all live in the same family from an economic perspective. That's correct.
Let's go to an email question from Brandon, who says, do you feel we will ever see a reverse Pigouvian tax, reducing the price of an item with positive externality using a similar percentage of price idea? That's a great question, yeah. Brandon.
Yeah, and it's a great idea, actually. So we do see some of those. For example, if you buy a hybrid car or you put more energy efficient appliances in your house or you convert to solar, people get a tax credit for a lot of those kinds of behaviors. So that, in a sense, is the reverse Pigouvian tax. But you've also hit on something that surprised us from our research. Maybe you would have anticipated it. But when we didn't frame this difference in price as a penalty, but rather as a benefit for the people who made healthier decisions, people liked it a lot more. So it could still be that a sugary drink is 50 cents more. But if instead we said, hey, look, what you actually get is a price discount on a healthy drink, then people felt like it was okay, because then they were actually being rewarded for doing something healthy instead of punished for doing something unhealthy.
David on Twitter says, no one should drink soda like water. Shame on companies for not communicating that. So yes, but tax them with the same result.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that I think your sentiment is being more and more widely held by the population. Soda sales as a whole have decreased a lot in the last few years for exactly that reason. And that's part of the reason that the soda industry is so unhappy about these taxes, because they're already losing a lot of sales simply because public opinion is shifting.
Is it possible to change people's perceptions of Pigouvian taxes? Should something be done to prompt a willingness on the part of the public to share responsibility? And how do you do that?
Yeah, that was tricky. In our research, we tried a few different things, and it was actually very difficult because of this underlying belief about the degree to which people are connected. The best thing that we found was framing the lower price as a reward rather than the higher price as a penalty. But one could argue that, you know, there's a bigger revolution to be undertaken that has to do with changing the way people see their connectedness or their isolation.
Let's go to Deirdre in Squirrel Hill with a comment. Hi, Deirdre.
A question and a comment. My question was, I wasn't sure, has there been any thought about putting, like, warning labels on soda the way that you would put on, like, a pack of cigarettes? And then my comment was that I teach the Edible Schoolyard program, and I just wanted to say that I think that teaching garden education and kitchen education, especially at the early grades, can be a really effective way of helping people make better food choices.
Boy, what would the warning on a soda, but would it be warning if you drink too much of this and you go to Europe and you're in the Netherlands and you want to buy a T-shirt, it'll be hard to find one that fits?
Well, I think it'd be tough because the causal link between sodas and obesity, as we said before, is not as close as the causal link between tobacco and cancer. What is interesting about even those tobacco labels, though, is that they create a curious backlash for a number of psychological reasons. Telling people that they might die if they smoke can actually make them smoke more. So the jury's still out on that. Your point about the early childhood cooking and gardening programs is absolutely on point. In fact, in Berkeley, which was the first city in the U.S. to pass a soda tax, that's exactly what they earmarked their soda tax money for, was to support those cooking and gardening classes in the schools, because again, they saw that as a way to create a long-term change in the health of these communities.
Is that happening in Philadelphia, as far as you know, with this soda tax?
I don't know exactly what specific programs they're planning to support. The question for Philadelphia will be whether they're allowed to collect the taxes while all the legal issues are worked out. If they are, as I said, I think they're looking a lot at schools, parks, and libraries. But it's possible some of that money will go down to education as well.
Let's take one last call from Jason in the North Hills. Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
You know, when you study the physiology of people that are morbidly obese, there are a very good portion of them that have no control over that. Mm-hmm. Just as a diabetic has no control over their diabetes, a lot of morbidly obese people are just chemically predisposed to overeating. And I think passing a tax on sugary drinks would be discriminatory against those people. And secondly, I think it's not right of governments to interfere with something so personal. And I think it's an absolutely wrong thing to do. And what's going to happen is these people, instead of getting one big gulp, they're going to get two little gulps. And they're still going to consume the calories. And, you know, for government to step in and say, we are going to legislate against this, therefore we're going to cure it, I think is absolutely, positively wrong.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate that comment. Well, he does raise a good point about getting two little ones. Or if you go to a place where you just buy the cup, you can go back to that soda fountain as many times, and you're not getting taxed despite of how much you're consuming. We're down to like 15 seconds. What would be your final comment, Kate?
Well, certainly where there's a will, there's a way on consumption. But what you just said was exactly the frame that we run into. If people see this as a purely personal decision without effects on others, then yeah, a soda tax it doesn't work for them in any way. People who feel that it's more than personal, though, tend to be more accepting.
Pitt Business School professor Kate Lamberton is an expert on Pigouvian taxes. That's what we've been discussing. She's written an award-winning research paper on the topic and joined us to talk about consumer perceptions of Pigouvian taxes. Kate Lamberton, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, a conversation with ornithologist David Sibley about being a rock star in the birding community. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.